Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I am Ryan Ballingy. Thank you for joining us. It's our first show of 2021, and it's our first real show in more than 18, almost 20 months at this point. So, hooray for us! We got a lot to talk about here in about a half hour's worth of time, and I want to let you know, first of all, that you can get a hold of me on Twitter or Instagram, although I'm quite boring there. Even on Facebook at Ryan Ballingy. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on pretty much every social media service at the handle Golf News Net. Okay, so one quick announcement before we get into the basically main issues of the week, and that is in our Hey, I'm Coming Back kind of pod that I released toward the end of the year last year. I said that we would delay the release of this show to the public by a couple of days and basically have our GNN supporters get it first. Well, after thinking about it and kind of working through that, I came to a conclusion that we're going to do something slightly different. So we're going to have this reaction show. We're going to have this Monday, Tuesday show, and that's going to be available to everybody, available to the public. Happy to have you. Hope you'll enjoy it. And then we'll do a second show, and that second show each week, which will be like a Wednesday, Thursday kind of show, a table setter show, that's going to be the show that's just for GNN supporter subscribers. So you're going to get one show a week if you're in the public. If you are a GNN supporter and you pay $30 for the year, you're through golfnewsnet.com, you will get an additional second show on a private feed just for you. And in addition to that, you'll get commentary and other benefits that, frankly, come with the GNN supporter membership aside from the podcast. So if you're interested in that, head over to golfnewsnet.com, check out the join section, explains it all there. We're going ad-free as best possible if you're a supporter too, because if you're paying to be a part of the site, you shouldn't have to deal with advertising while you're there. I firmly believe that. So that's that announcement. So on to the reaction show, right? So we had our first tournament of the year. Lone tournament last week, the PGA Tour Century Tournament of Champions, and that was very quickly pushed to the background when, before the tournament started, there was an insurrection 7 miles from my house. I live in the suburban DC area. As the crow flies, I'm not very far at all from the Capitol or the White House. I'm a short metro ride away, short car ride away. I don't know how to better explain it to you, but you can feel when stuff happens in that town. You can feel when stuff happens in that city. Big things, you can feel it. There's just an energy that kind of comes out even farther than the boundaries of Washington, D.C. And you could just feel it. And obviously, you could feel it if you watched it on TV. Because I've been, and you probably have potentially as well if you've been to D.C. over the years. You've been to the Capitol. I mean, I've been in the Capitol building. I've taken the tour. I've seen as much of the building as you're allowed to see as a member of the public. And it's an incredible place. It really is. And I think that's made what happened all the more personal, but still very stunning. And I'm going to leave it to people much smarter and more eloquent than I am to report on that and to bring to you the realities of the terror of that day. However, from the golf side of things, those images, that insurrection, immediately brought to mind that not too long after President Donald Trump leaves office, he becomes obviously a private citizen on January 20th. Just after noon, and he and his Trump organization would be hosting the 2022 PGA Championship at his Bedminster, New Jersey golf club, the place he has gone the last four summers when he wanted to get out of DC and play golf for a couple weeks. And that just really got at me. That what happened at the Capitol, that he incited, that he inspired, that he didn't stop, that needed to have a penalty related to his future life as a private citizen. And from a golf perspective, that penalty is losing the PGA Championship. And it took a few days. These things take time. I'm sure there was plenty of earnest discussion between the members of the PGA of America board, its officers, etc. And then they ultimately decided on Sunday that they were going to exit this contract. They were going to terminate it and then deal with whatever comes after that. So they terminated the contract. They announced that publicly. And the timeline of it was interesting because in the morning, and maybe it published Saturday night, I'm not certain, but there was a piece from New Jersey Advance Media. They run NJ.com, run a number of newspapers in New Jersey. It was by their sports editor who published a piece that basically insinuated in the first paragraph in the title that the PGA of America was taking the PGA Championship away from Trump National. That spread like wildfire on Reddit, on Twitter, on Facebook, all over the place, got a ton of traffic. And just a parsing of it, a simple parsing of it with a fine-tooth comb, you could figure out that this writer, Kevin Callahan, was trying to aggregate, in his words, what he told me, aggregate columns from Eamon Lynch and from Barry Zwerluga of the Washington Post, who was excellent. And Eamon's column said, kind of projected, but did not say for certain, that he felt the PGA of America had no choice but to take this action. They ultimately took later in the day. But Eamon was not saying definitively that that was going to happen. Just said, the odds are very low that this still happens at Trump's club, and that after the election, this decision gets a whole lot easier because Trump is no longer president. He can't be punitive. He can't try to exact some kind of revenge. He can't sick people in the PGA of America in quite the same way when you're not the sitting president. And the guy, Kevin, basically just used that paragraph to say that the PGA of America is taking the tournament away from Trump National. And we had this back and forth on Twitter. I said, hey, are you trying to insinuate this, or are you telling me this is happening? Is this additional reporting from you? And he said he aggregated, which meant he copied and pasted hundreds of words of both those two gentlemen's columns to try to then create this misleading headline at the time that this was going to happen, but did not know for certain. Then that sent into a whole series of other events, because then Alan Shipnuck from Golf.com and Golf Magazine started working the phones, working his sources, and I had heard similar, that this was probably going to happen, but that there were reasons why they might not do it. And the reasons that they might not do it would be a potential lawsuit, potential death threats, potential annoyance and bullying, the economic impact in New Jersey that would be removed from that part of New Jersey by taking the tournament away. Those were all considerations from the PGA of America, whether or not they should do this. But as Alan reported, ultimately, the PGA of America decided it was way better for them to not have the tournament there and deal with that than to have the tournament there and potentially have what happened at Shoal Creek in 1990. When they went to Shoal Creek, Shoal Creek's ownership basically said, we're never admitting a black person, never admitting an African-American member to our club. And every sponsor, and sponsorship wasn't quite as big at the time, but every sponsor basically pulled out and said, nope, we're not getting behind this. We are not condoning racism, not at a private club, not anywhere. We're not getting on board with this. The next year, the PGA Tour, the PGA of America, the USGA, they all got on board and said, we are not going to bring our championships to clubs that refuse to admit African-American members. End of story. Ultimately, that ended up becoming more of a policy toward just general discrimination, whether that's racist, sexist, what have you. And that same fate was probably going to happen to this PGA Championship, that their sponsors probably helped weigh in on this and said, if you have this thing there, you might as well not put our branding up and we will take our check back. And there will be long-term repercussions of this. You cannot support this from a business perspective, because not only is the PGA of America have their name on it and their brand attached to it and all of that stuff, the sponsors do. The sponsors that put up the big bucks, have a lot of the TV time that, yeah, it annoys a lot of you from commercials, but they put up the money to make this thing as big as it is. There's no way that they want to be associated with President Trump, soon to be former President Trump. They don't want any part of that. So it is, frankly, from the statement from the PGA of America president, clear that this was more of a business decision and maybe a moral, ethical decision, but more of a business decision because it was going to have way bigger of an impact for sponsors to walk away, for ticket sales to fall to nothing, things like that. And I'm sure there still would have been plenty of people that would have come, but television viewing would have gone down. There probably would have been protests. You would have lost sponsors. It just would not have been good. And it would have put all the attention on the host and the host club instead of on the players, the championship, the result, and the PGA of America. So it was a pretty simple decision for them. It was the right decision. And full stop, you cannot convince me otherwise. It was absolutely the right decision. Don't write me an email telling me any reason why you don't think it was a good decision. It is the only decision. And they may have to pay the Trump organization millions of dollars to get out of the contract. But they may also say, you know what, we'll take a civil suit to court and we will go to discovery. Because once we go to discovery, we can ask you all kinds of uncomfortable questions about the profitability of your business, the viability of it, how much the viability of it depended upon the PGA of America being associated with it, all of that. But that doesn't mean the PGA of America should get all the kudos in the world for making this decision. Again, it's the only one they had. And second, they got themselves into this mess in 2014 when they signed this agreement and made a big deal of it. Hey, we're going to have the 2022 PGA Trump National. We're going to have the Grand Slam of Golf at his Los Angeles club, public course, and it's going to be great. That was years after he started to get on the birtherism train, trying to convince susceptible Americans that former President Barack Obama was not born in this country. That, in and of itself, should have been disqualifying of that agreement. They got themselves into the mess. They got themselves out of one part of it with the PGA Grand Slam of Golf when they refused to have it in 2015 and then ended the tournament altogether the following year. And they got out of that. And they still had this hanging out there. And I imagine that the hope from the organization was this guy will just get to the end. He won't do something so catastrophic that we could still go on with this. We'll take a hit, obviously, from a percentage of the country, at least half, that thinks this is a bad idea, and then we'll move on and never deal with them again. But the whole inciting and fomenting sedition kind of caused this problem. So that leaves us with an open date. We have a new open date for the 2022 PGA Championship. Again, remember, it's played in May now. Yeah, it was August last year because of necessity, but it's back to May this year. Kiawah Island is set to host in South Carolina, their ocean course. So that's supposed to host this May. Then you've got next May that's wide open. No announcement's been made one way or the other what's going to happen. But I think some options are on the table here. And I think they're interesting ones. So one option, I think, is to go to Kiawah and say, look, come May, the world is not going to be in a place with COVID where we can have the PGA Championship like normal. We would like to give you the option of taking the 2022 slot so you can have people, you can have maximum exposure for the resort, you can have a lot of people on property, and you can make a lot of money. We want to reward you for going through this process with us. Would you take a better date if we're pretty almost certain that we're going to have regular size crowds come 2022. Would you do that? And I think Kia would probably say yes, because they're going to get more from it. They're going to get more exposure, and it's going to have a longer term benefit for them, I think. And then you take the 2021 date, which again, we're not going to have many, if any, spectators come May. The world is just not there yet. And so the PGA of America can then say, for 2021, we are going to instead move the PGA Championship to name your place. You could go to Valhalla, which the PGA of America owns, and they could say, you know, we're going to take the hit. They're supposed to host in 2024. And say, okay, well, we're going to make a little switcheroo. We're going to do something with 24, whatever. But we're going to have Valhalla this year because that means we can eat the costs of whatever they might have to pay to exit that contract with Trump in a settlement or whatever legal fees are associated with that. They can deal with whatever hit they're going to get from not having ticket sales by having it at a facility that they own. The infrastructure is already there. They can play the championship and move on. And then they can worry about 22 and 24. 22 goes to Kiowa, and then 24, you figure out. That's one option. Second option, and this is, I think, an interesting one and kind of cool, that if they still had it at Kiowa this year and they said to Harding Park, you guys got robbed, because not only did Harding Park get robbed, but the Bay Area and California fans got robbed because they had a PGA championship with zero fans. Let's run it back and give it to them again. Let's do it one more time. I doubt that's what they would do, but I think that would be a magnanimous gesture. I think that's an option on the table. There are some other candidates out there, regular style suspects for this championship. Shoal Creek is actually on that list. I think it would be kind of cool because it would mark kind of coming full circle from 1990 that they got away from President Trump to go to Shoal Creek of all places. And Shoal Creek has evolved a lot in the 30 years since that 1990 PGA Championship. It's come a long way from all accounts, and that it's a great club for golfers and that it's a place to be, good place to be. You have talk of going back right back to Bethpage, which just hosted a couple of years, you know, last year, not in 2020, 2019, I should say. So that's an option. I don't love that, because the PGA of America is then going to bring the Ryder Cup there now in 2025, because now they're back on the every other year, odd year cadence. So 25 would be for Bethpage. So you're going to have a 22 PGA Championship and a 25 Ryder Cup. So you're going to have the 19, 22, and 25, your biggest events at Bethpage. That's not going to be looked at favorably by golf fans, because they're going to say this smacks of East Coast elitism. Yes, I know Bethpage is totally public and it's a lovely place, but to host the championship in the New York metropolitan area and the Ryder Cup three times in a six-year span is just not a good look. I don't think that should be a viable option. There's the idea that you should try to keep it in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. That's reasonable, because again, one of the fears was the economic impact of the championship being taken away. So where do you look at then? You could look at really off the wall places like Pine Valley, which would be pretty crazy, but okay. You could look at Liberty National, which has become a willing host and a capable host of PGA Tour events. Posted in the Northern Trust, they posted the President's Cup. It's a good club, and they're very willing to peacock for, you know, their members are willing to peacock that by putting it on TV. I think it's not my favorite golf course in the world, but it is a capable, deserving championship host. In a pinch, you could say, let's go to Liberty National, keep it in the area, show the Statue of Liberty views over and over and over again, inspire a little bit, rah, rah, rah. It's not bad. It's not a bad thing. Here's my suggestion. Take either the 2021 or 2022 PGA Championship, however you choose, whatever order you choose to do this, to somewhere that would never otherwise host the PGA Championship. And I don't, depends on what you do, right? If you told Kiowa, go to 2022, and we're just going to have it with no spectators in 2021, everywhere is an option. Opens up to everything. You just got to find a reasonable club and ample parking for some small number of officials, volunteers, media, and players and caddies. That's it. That opens the door to pretty much anywhere. Because as long as you're within reasonable reach of an airport, it's going to be fine. If you go the other way and you keep it at Kiowa and you go to 22 and you're expecting to have fans at this venue, now all of a sudden you've limited what your options are. You're going to go to a place where you've probably been before, or you're going to need to find a place that you haven't been before that has all the things you need for a modern major championship. But again, I would still say, let's go somewhere we've never been. The PGA Championship has never been in West Virginia. Greenbrier would be pretty cool. The PGA Championship has never been in Arizona. How about somewhere in Phoenix, Tucson, Scottsdale, you know, that area? That could be really cool. Desert golf as a major championship would be unique and interesting, frankly. How about Florida? I mean, they get tons of regular PGA Tour events, but they never get majors. You could look at a place like, depending on what you did, Stream Song. Might be pretty interesting. They obviously have 100,000 acres worth of land to stage the thing, so that wouldn't be an issue. Do you look at a place like somewhere in Colorado, Ballyneal, a really high-end property, really great golf course that, or Colorado Golf Club, which was a great host for the Solheim Cup. You know, bring a whole lot of majors to Colorado. Cherry Hills is really the only venue that seems to get it. Broadmoor is great, but that's maybe a once every 15, 20 years venue. How about Inverness? That was suggested to me a number of times. I think they would chafe at that because they're hosting the 2021 Solheim Cup. But the club looked brilliant when the LPGA brought a pop-up event there this summer. It's going to be a great Solheim Cup host. I don't know if they'd be willing to host the Solheim Cup this upcoming September and then not but 9 months later host the PGA Championship. Unlikely. Could you find somewhere in Iowa? Harvester Club's really, really cool. It's a Keith Foster design, so obviously there's a little ding there with his reputation, but it's still a really awesome property. That's something you could consider. Would you take it to Arkansas? The Aleutian Club is not too far out of Little Rock. It is an incredible facility by all accounts. They have the room to do it. It would be like the PGA of America, almost bringing it to the next best thing in terms of look and feel to Augusta National. And then you can start kind of get a little bit more outlandish from there. Do you pick these kind of top 5, top 10, top 20 clubs that would otherwise never host it because their membership doesn't want it and they have high enough of a reputation they don't need the bump? Or do you go somewhere that's public? Because the public crowd that plays Bethpage Black loved having the PGA Championship there. I know the PGA of America is about its professionals, and a lot of those people work at private clubs. But if you bring that to a public site, I think that's pretty cool to do too. So there's a lot of options on the table. I don't know what your opinion is. Be interested to hear it. A lot of people gave interesting feedback on my tweet about this, but I really do believe that if you bring this to a place that never would otherwise get it, you're going to bring in a whole lot of fans who maybe are curious onlookers, or maybe they're just golfers who never thought they'd get a chance to see a major, and you take that opportunity and do something with it instead of going by to an old, reliable staple that's been through this, has done it before. That just feels like a retread. This is an opportunity to do something special and different. Make it special and different. How you do that, that's up to you. Okay, the other story we have is the Century Tournament of Champions. Really interesting tournament. Very happy for Harris English in terms of being a tout and trying to tell people when to time these things and when to look at golfers. In one and done, I used Harris in the final event of 2020 on the PGA Tour, the Mayakoba event. He finished T5, was one event off. He wins this time out. It's his first win in nearly 9 years on the PGA Tour. He won two times in 2013, nothing since. And this is the culmination for him, at least at this point, of a ton of hard work that really got him bit in the butt when he had to go to the Korn Ferry Tour Finals just before last season. He had to go. Got his card back and was kind of starting to come back and make some hay. But after the resumption of the season in the summer, went on a tear, really found something, contended in a number of tournaments, and got himself in a position where he felt like he could win again. And then on Sunday at Kapalua, kind of up against it at the Plantation course with Joaquin Niemann coming with a 9-under-64, posts a number. English had several holes left and decided, I'm going to get there. You know, came into the house, final four holes, one under par, two birdies, bogey. Had an eagle putt to win on 18, the 72nd hole, just missed it. And comes back the very next hole, makes birdie. Joaquin Niemann hit a tremendous second shot into the par five and was a forward bounce away from probably winning with eagle or at least sending it to another playoff hole. And then it rolled off the green into a kind of bit of a gnarly lie on the side hill. And he just, it was a 50-50 kind of ball and popped it up a little bit right onto the collar and couldn't make the birdie putt. And there's Harris English to clean it up with a 5-6 footer to win his first, for the first time in nearly a decade. It was a great tournament. It was really interesting to watch. Wide variety of different players that were contending. You had young guys like Niemann and Daniel Berger and Justin Thomas. And they're all still young. Niemann's the youngest of them, but all young guys. Then you had someone like Ryan Palmer in his almost mid-40s. He's there contending throughout the week. You got someone in Harris English who has been up and down everywhere. You had in the periphery guys like Sung J.M., and Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau, kind of big names that really weren't having the best weeks, but they still were contenders. It was a great tournament, great way to start the year. Then I don't think it was – I mean, I didn't like that they invited the players who got into the top 30 and then qualified for the Tour Championship here, but they're trying to fill out a field. Moving forward, I think there were some great suggestions. This has been on the table for a while, but I would love to see a two-year exemption. If you win on the PGA Tour, you should be invited for as long as you have your winner's exemption for that victory to the Tournament of Champions. Up to 2 years. If you win a major, you shouldn't get a five-year exemption. If you win the players, you shouldn't get a five-year exemption. It should be capped at two. Win a WGC, do not get three. Same thing with Memorial and all those tournaments that get you three. Two for everybody, and I think that should be a big benefit from winning. And that way you fill the field a little bit more, you get closer to maybe 40, 45 players every year, and that's one of the big perks of winning. It's not just one invite, two invites. You get two cracks at it. I would like that. I think that would be better, because some years you have so many players, you have five, six players who win multiple times, and in a 47-event season, you're reducing the maximum number of players under 40. That just feels like not enough. So I would like to see a two-year exemption moving forward. The LPGA has done that with their Tournament of Champions, in part out of necessity, because they have players who win multiple tournaments a little bit more frequently, and they also have some players who win tournaments who are not members. So they're not eligible for the Tournament of Champions. So to have a legitimate sized field, you need to extend that exemption. I would like to see that for the Tournament of Champions. I do want to address Justin Thomas real quick. Justin Thomas muttered under his breath, not F-U-C-K, but F-A-G-G-O-T, homophobic slur, to himself after he missed a par putt in the third round at Kapalua. I think it was the fourth or fifth hole. And it was showed live on TV. I was not watching at the time. Saw it in my timeline later and thought, man, this is happening again. Pat, this happens every once in a while where you get a player who typically mutters this to themselves. They're castigating themselves after they miss a putt or hit a poor shot. And they use a homophobic slur. Patrick Reed did it. I'm sure it's happened to other players. But it got caught on a microphone because there are no fans at Kapalua and the mics have been live. And throughout the course of the week with, again, no fans and really no breeze to get into the mics, the players have been picked up using the F word, the curse word, F word to themselves. And you've heard we're sorry for our mics, blah, blah, blah. There wasn't that apology from Golf Channel when that aired live, whether that they didn't hear it or what have you. It's not important. Then Justin Thomas was told after the round, you were aired on TV saying this. What happened? What do you have to say about it? And Thomas said, first, that two things he said that are kind of chafing. One, he said he found out about it after the round, which is kind of bothersome. Gives away the game a little bit because he's then saying to himself, or kind of copping to, okay, I said this as instinct. Or he's lying and said, I found out about it after the round. What did he find out? That it was aired or that he said it? Either way, probably not the best way to phrase it. But then the other part of it, which is kind of more chafing, is that he said, this is not who I am. I hate that apology line, not just from Justin Thomas, from anybody. When you say this is not who you are, that's not true. It's precisely who you were in that moment. That does not mean that's who you are permanently and forever, but it means that's who you are. And this is why you're apologizing, because that's who you were. And other than that, he offered what appeared to be a genuine, earnest apology that he felt bad. Although he did say he was sorry to anyone that got offended. You got to get away from that in your apologies in life. I learned that a long time ago. If you say, I'm sorry I offended you, that is not saying you're sorry. That's saying, I'm sorry I pissed you off. And that is very different than saying you're sorry for what you did. Two very different things. And I think the reaction to it is kind of emblematic of where we are. Not politically, potentially, but just where we are as a society. Because anytime something like this kind of controversy comes up, there are two kinds of replies in my timeline. One is, yeah, we should condemn this, or we should say this is bad. And then any range of, yeah, should lose everything, lose all of his sponsors, lose his entire livelihood. Or he apologized, let's move on. And then the other column of response is, you liberal snowflakes, all this is cancel culture. You guys are woke. Like, all this is virtue signaling. If you use the phrases woke, virtue signaling, or cancel culture with me, I block you, because that means you have no idea what you're talking about and you are wasting my time. There is no such thing, at least in my world, as virtue signaling. I'm sure people do it, but I don't. And for you to attach that stupid label shows your ignorance. Next, cancel culture is not what was happening here. I did not see a single person in my timeline or others that I sought out call for Justin Thomas to lose sponsors or money or anything like that. They're trying to hold him to account for what he said. Yes, it got picked up by a mic. Yes, no one would have noticed were it not picked up by a mic. But the instant it did, it became a public deal because it became said in public. And that means there has to be some kind of wrestling with that. And the proper conclusion is, I think it's true for most people, unless this is kind of like one of those 10 commandments breaking type things, where if you make a mistake, you should be allowed, especially the first time that you do it, or at least known to have done it, you should be allowed to offer an earnest apology, vow to do better, and move on. And that's what I believe was afforded to and should be afforded to Justin Thomas. If he does it again, the pitchforks are coming out. But you are allowed to mess up. You are allowed to mess up and be sorry. And you should not have everything instantly taken from you when you mess up at a certain level. Now, Scott Piercy calling Pete Buttigieg a gay slur and then the whole QAnon thing. Okay, that's above and beyond. That's the difference between calling yourself a name you shouldn't be calling anybody, including yourself, versus publicly trying to troll a presidential candidate that's openly gay. Different, very different things. And I feel that subtlety, that's not even subtlety, it's the scale of things that happen. You got to be able to understand that on both sides. The end of someone who's offended and the end of someone who goes, that's not a big deal. Or the end of the actor who does it and goes, well, what? And for the folks who kind of come down and say this is cancel culture. There's a very strong difference between trying to hold someone to account for something that happened and wanting their lives ruined. I don't think anyone was rooting for that in golf, the latter. And you can't just say criticizing someone is cancel culture. That is not. It's not even close. And it's a misunderstanding of whatever the hell that term means. But I'm pretty sure it's a misunderstanding of that. So take the guy at his word. He apologized. He said he's going to do better. I believe him that he will do better. And we move on from it. Move on to Sony. We've got a good field at Sony. YLA is one of my favorite golf courses on the PGA Tour. It's a Seth Rayner design. It's open for everybody in terms of the field, in terms of who can win. Pretty much any kind of player can win. You can overpower it. You can be a shorter hitter. You can putt lights out. You can nail the par fives and the short fours. There are a bunch of different ways to succeed at YLA. It's a great, great golf course. Probably one of the more underrated ones on the PGA Tour. Unfortunately, the coverage windows are not huge this week. It's 3.5 hours in the first 3 days, 4 hours on Sunday. I mean, that's kind of standard issue, but I would love to see more of it. And I think that the guidance for this week is going to be the same as it is pretty much every year if you're trying to pick a winner, which is look to the people that played Kapalua the week before. Because in, I believe, 6 of the last 7 years, the winner at Sony played the week before. And three-fourths of the field that played at Kapalua is in the field at Sony. So that should be where you start and end with a lot of your fantasy picks, your bets, stuff like that. Look at that. Look at that crop of, I believe it's 31 of 42 players who are making the trek, doing a little island hopping. And that's probably who you should look at. All right. Let's go do it. We haven't done this in a long time. It's very exciting to have done a show again. Obviously, we have plenty of things to talk about, and we're not always going to have plenty of things to talk about. Sometimes it'll be a little bit more existential. Sometimes it'll be a little bit more outside golf. But we'll have our second show of the week. And with that second show of the week, that'll be for our GNN supporters. Again, interview shows, stuff like that, as those come up, those will be for GNN supporters as well. But that this weekly wrap up, start the week show will be available for everybody. That was my dog in the background. That's Dottie. She's probably barking at the UPS guy. Thank you for giving me the privilege of your time. I know we have lots more time on our hands right now than maybe we've ever had. In some ways, we have so much less of it. But for you to take time out of your day to listen to some guy talk about golf is really meaningful. And I greatly appreciate it, and it's an honor, frankly. So, until later in the week for our GNN supporters, and this time next week, probably Monday instead, for another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show, I'm Ryan Balaji. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time.